G'day guys, Sammy Gordon here, host of the
Scouting Australia podcast.
So I'd like to welcome you all today to the very first ever episode powered by Australian Property Scout Buyers Agency. I'd like to introduce my co-host for today's episode, and he will be a regular repeat offender, Mr. James Ibrahim. How are you, mate?
I'm very well. Thank you. Thank you.
No worries at all, mate. Great
good to be on the podcast, mate. The very first podcast, Sammy.
We have been talking about this thing for quite a while. It's been percolating in the background. We've been excited to be running this thing for quite a while, mate. So I'm very excited to be here, mate.
I am equally as excited, probably not as excited as you, because I know this has been very close to your heart. And I've got a few questions for you about the podcast and, okay. and why you've started now, because I know you've been in the biz for a while now.
Yes.
A lot of the community's wondering.
Yes.
Big launch, getting excited, all the gems from you. So that's... Everyone should be really excited.
Mate, I've loved jumping on everyone else's podcast for many years now. It's been a thing I've loved doing, you know, for a very, very long time. I've had great reach, great response and everything as well. A lot of people have been, I guess, asking me to do one for a while too and cover different things, different topics. There's only so much you can cover in a Wise Wednesday on a weekly event. You know, and so trying to dive deeper and go deeper into different topics, Q&As and all the rest of it, of things that people really want to know. But I think like the big thing, I guess the big reason of why I wanted to do it as well, property like has given me so much. I started from very humble beginnings, was never given, you know, money from my parents to start or anything. Started on a very, very low wage. I knew property was something I always wanted to chase and try and build something from. I never imagined how big it would go, right? Like how big I'd be able to take this thing. And so this essentially is my way of giving back. It's given me so much. And the idea of it is to help out all those other people that are out there, especially starting the journey, starting out with nothing, planning for their first purchase in 2-3 years or already on the journey and on the way through, or, you know, trying to fix what they're doing and keep building as well. So the idea is to try and help any and all levels of investors with this as well. And I think as we go through, you know, like we're about to discuss different things, different segments that we're probably going to run through, it's going to kind of be different levels. You know, you're going to have your foundational sort of lessons and learnings, and then your more advanced techniques and strategies and different ways to win. Because, mate, there are so many ways to win in this beautiful game.
And also, a lot of people know you, obviously, in your story, but I'm sure a lot of the listeners out there don't really know exactly how you started. So I'm curious as to the episodes that we're going to be covering, but diving a little bit deeper into your personal journey. And I think a lot of people are going to get a lot of surprises about how you actually started and how you accumulated, how you built out. So how do you feel about that? About diving a little bit deeper into the Sammy Gordon story?
Yeah, mate, I'm looking forward to it. Hey, so there's so many different things in there that I guess, for one, no one's ever really asked me the questions about different things that I guess were there as well. Different things I went through, make different wins, different losses. Realistically, I never look at them as losses. When you make a mistake, it's a lesson. If you don't take the lesson from it, that's the loss. But if you learn from it, then mate, it's a costly, you know, it's cost you something to do it, but it's a lesson, and you've paid for it. And a lot of the time, they're the best lessons. You learn the most from it because you don't want it to happen again.
And obviously, Australian Property Scout is, you know, you've started the business. It's done exceptionally well.
It is.
A lot of, how is this podcast going to be different to the other property podcasts?
Mate, I think we're going to go very deep on a lot of different things. So the big thing, like you said, going deep on my portfolio. Mate, we're going to go in deep on yours as well. You're very close to that double digits that I know a lot of people chase, the 10 properties. You're at 8 yourself, and I'm really looking forward to diving into your stuff. So I think going deep into each other's portfolios and being really raw with it, but then also the continual acquisition. So I've done exceptionally well in residential over many, many years. And absolutely love the resi space, developed, you know, bought, you know, did buy and holds, built, renovations, all the rest of sort of stuff. But man, we're going to be starting into the commercial. Like I'm starting my commercial journey at the moment. I've been doing a lot of research and getting into all that. So I'm going to be raw, man. I'm going to be sharing the numbers of the deals that I'm going to be doing as well. So obviously the listeners can listen in on that and hit me up with any extra questions that kind of come through with it. But man, I'm going to be raw with that sort of stuff. Man, I'm not going to be pulling any punches, like holding back and
that's unlike you.
Hey, I'm known for being a little direct, but, mate, it's not going to be, you know, it's the idea of it is really to try and deliver as much value as you can. you don't deliver as much value by pulling punches and being soft around the edges. You get the real results and the real juicy meat and all the rest of it from telling the truth on the way things are and situations and whatnot as well. So,
which is actually a really good topic we're going to dive in a little bit later our first episode is the mindset of a bulletproof investor. And I think we were speaking about this earlier on. There's so many different aspects of investing, and buying the property is actually one of the easier parts in terms of the actual transaction. But everything leading up to that point, there is so many things to unpack that don't you think people just don't get a really good appreciation as to getting ready for that decision? Like the either the negativity or the blockages or the your family or your friends or people telling you can't do this or what are you doing?
Yeah. There's definitely a huge amount of facets that are involved with the first purchase, with all purchases, but especially with that first purchase. I wouldn't say the purchase is the, I mean, I guess you can pull the trigger easily, but if you want to get it right, it's definitely not the easiest one.
but in the sense that a transaction of just signing a contract, that's the easy part.
100%. But yeah, man, I agree with you. Everything in the lead up to it. I know that's one of the apps that you want to cover, right? Is it, you know, building everything in the upfront or that process that comes together and how to navigate that process and the best way to do it, especially beginning. Because there's so much mixed reviews and mixed results out there. And man, I've worked with hundreds of investors now, obviously built my own portfolio, built yours, a lot of yours as well, and a huge, obviously a huge amount of clients too. So I guess being able to share the way that I would do it, actually, I think this is one of the topics that you wanted to do is like, how would I do it if I started again? Like, how would I do it from now? Literally, we're going to go through those exact steps of these are the people I would speak to, you know, even in the finance and what to look for in your conveyances, your property managers, everything, the full kit and caboodle, especially for that first deal, but then also building from there, you know, how would I do it again, starting again?
It's funny how you say that because some people would say you started 12 years ago, prices were different.
13 years ago, mate.
13. Giving away your age.
What's your age? That's the biggest.
I'm younger than you.
Wow. Got a hard life, buddy. Bloody hell. You need some.
Yeah, need better moisturizer. Skin cream, yeah. But a lot of people might say 13 years ago was a lot easier to invest than it was today. And they quickly forget. And I know we're going to unpack that in a later episode, but they quickly forget. I think you mentioned your first interest rate was over
7%. 7.09% back in 2009. I know a lot of people think it was a lot easier back then, but mate, it was very hard to find like positive cash flow and find things that would put you in front. And that was one of the mistakes I made in my first year was not running my numbers properly and really bleeding when I didn't have that money to bleed. I was a very low income earner. So yeah, man, like it's actually probably a great time to dive into how I'll do it again now because it's
in the almost, current market.
Yeah, because it's like resetting. Like, man, we're November 2022. And it's almost gone back to a very similar, you know, sort of time in the market. Interest rates back to those sort of highs. A bit of a deflated sort of market compared to what it was in the years preceding that. A lot of markets were booming 2004 to 2007. I bought my first one in 2009. So yeah, man, it's going to be an interesting, I think, topic running through that.
And even breaking down your portfolio, I think that podcast zero, like starting out again, is going to be really important and building out to say your first 5 to 10 properties.
Yep.
And then there will be some listeners out there thinking, well, okay, how do I get from 10 to 20? Yep. And how do I get from 20 to 30?
Yeah.
And not everyone's going to be in that point. And I think the important point also is just because you have created a $20 million portfolio, that doesn't have to be for everyone.
Yeah.
Because everyone's goal is different, right?
100%.
So it's not as if everyone has to replicate what you're doing.
Yeah. I think, mate, that's also a podcast we'll probably run through is goal setting. You know, how do you realistically set out what you're trying to do? Exactly what you're saying, mate. You don't need to go for 40 plus properties or whatever you're trying to build. Like some people love the number in the mind of, you know, getting to 10 or 20 or 50, 100, whatever it is. But it's like, what's the actual result you're looking for from it? Because when we can unpack this in one of those episodes, but a lot of the time it's not as many properties as you think to get yourself to 100, 150, 200 grand passive. And some people don't even want that much, you know? So I think building through that and working through how we can you essentially reverse engineer, you know, what you want to achieve as an investor, I think that'll be awesome, mate. Like I'm looking forward to that.
And also on that, the ego of investing. I know we're going to talk about that at a later point, but I think that's huge.
Is that big one?
Not only, I mean, some people would love to say, yeah, I've got 50 properties, but what does that actually mean?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, there's not a lot of people that have 50 properties, but some people would rather have to say that they've got a certain amount of properties, but we're going to really crunch down as to what is the difference between a good portfolio as opposed to just saying, I own an apartment in Bondi. What the hell does that mean? Is that a good investment?
Is that a question?
No, but I'm just saying, I think that I find that really interesting when I speak to people that they would rather tell you that they've got an investment property in these exclusive suburbs.
Yeah.
But that, what does that actually mean? Is that a good investment? Differentiating is really important.
Mate, it's a very, very important topic. I know before some people have come out and grilled me about some of the cheaper stuff I've bought. But man, I was at a point where I didn't have much capital and I didn't have much cash flow. And that's what I needed in my portfolio. And I was able to do deals that I could pull all my money back out. I'd do the deal, literally strip all the capital back out of it through equity release, and then still be left with a heavy positive cash flow. Mate, I don't care what price point we're at, whether at 10 mil or 100 grand a unit. It doesn't matter if it's achieved that result for you. The price point doesn't matter depending on the level of the investor, right? And what they've got to work with. So, man, I think that's a huge one to unpack, because a lot of people, they harp on about this blue chip and all the rest of it. And a lot of those guys are going to come unstuck in the next couple of years with interest rates back to 7%. Now they're running negative at 2%. So what are they going to, where's that market going to go when interest rates get back to 7? But that's a topic for another day.
Are you picking interest rates at being at 7%?
It's a tough one, because it is going to come to inflation, which we it's a very hard thing to forecast where's that going to peak out at. So, there's a lot of people talking like, where's it going to get to? I don't think we're going to get really much above where I probably started, which was around about that 7% to begin with in 2009. But I also do think that rates are going to come back down. When those inflation numbers are pulled back in, essentially for the inflation numbers to get pulled back in, they're going to have to stall the economy. That they're going to achieve what they're trying to do out there in a pretty brutal way. Once they do it, I do firmly believe they'll start chopping rates again to try and reignite the economy. They've got inflation under control, try and reignite it again, kickstart it, get it moving. So I think we will see, obviously it'll peak and I think it'll come back down. But mate, like long-term interest rate averages, you look at the Australian averages, they've sat forever over the last, 50, 70 years, whatever, as far back as it goes, they sit as the average around about 5 to 6%. So if you build a portfolio that's sustainable during that period with the idea that at the back end you're going to own some very high yielding assets at a low debt level, man, I don't care if interest rates get to 20%. If you're holding 10% debt or 20% debt, it's not going to affect you. It's just going to open up more opportunities for you to be able to buy. And full disclaimer, I do not think they're going to that level. It's just an example, right? And that's why that, again, the exit strategy, man, that's something I'm so passionate about, and almost everyone in the industry is against me about it. But how many of them have achieved I don't mean to sound vain, but what I've achieved, you've gotten to that passive income target allows you to leave work. If you don't debt reduce your portfolio and your portfolio's got a decent yield, mate, you're not walking away from work. You're tied to your job.
Yeah.
You're tied to your job. So the exit strategy is another big one that I really want to cover. I know I was probably going to get a lot of stiff competition, but come at me because I know it works. So.
Well, you did say you're not going to pull any punches on this podcast, which I'm sure the listeners out there who do know you. We need a bigger desk to create the separation, because things might get a little bit heated.
That's true, mate.
But also, in addition to, I know when we were talking about the podcast and just from being a client of Australian Property Scout and of yours, how focused you are on the customer and the client. So we want to hear from people too, right? We're going to get some case studies. We're going to hear anyone's got questions. Some of the segments I know that you wanted to do is for people to write in or send in an audio question.
Definitely.
And we can really unpack that.
Yeah.
So it's not only just going to be one-way communication. We really, you're open to people.
We definitely want an engaged audience. So like, that's what I love. I love it about the Wise Wednesdays. The Wise Wednesdays, I can only pack so much into a, 3-5 minute video. The whole idea of this is unpacking those questions that people want, a proper length discussion on, and both pros and cons to all these different things out there. So we definitely want everyone to be writing in, sending their questions in and everything as well.
Nothing's off limits.
Nothing's off limits. Oh, Maybe a little bit. There's a 1% of things are off limits, but pretty well everything else is.
Try and stump him. Try and stump Sammy. Come up with the most complex questions. Let's see what he's really made of.
Mate, honestly, I'm happy for anything property related or otherwise involved. Yeah, definitely happy to throw anything and everything at us. And mate, if there's anything we stump that gets us stumped, mate, we'll get the right guest on to be able to answer it with us as well. And I think that's a big thing. Like you said, client success stories, you know, what have people been able to achieve, especially clients of Australian Property Scout? There's a lot of young, you know, men, women, and older as well, but like these people out there really trying to change their lives. And in a few very short years, they've achieved some massive results. I know on the weekend, we caught up a couple of guys, it's three brothers and a girlfriend. Young, they're all sub 30 years old. And in the past 2 years, across the four of them, they've all accumulated. There's 10 properties between the four of them in 2 years. Under 30. It's just, mate, crazy, crazy results. And I love that stuff, you know, because it's proof in the pudding of what we do as well. Picking the right locations, buying at the right price, executing the right strategies, all that sort of thing. So investor stories is going to be huge, and something I'm really looking forward to as well.
And also, if I can just add, because the audience of Australian Property Scout and the client base is quite diverse.
Very.
So it's not as if it's only clients in their mid-20s or early 20s or starting out. Yeah. Plenty of clients in their 50s.
100%.
So a lot of the case studies, and are you going to dive into different situations? Couples that are in their 30s, young family, 50-year-olds looking to retire.
Everything, mate.
Starting out.
Everything.
Awesome.
So that was just like obviously an example of some, and it just popped into my mind because I literally caught up with them a couple of days ago and had a big strategy session with the four of them across what we're doing. But, mate, I know there's another fella from southwestern Sydney. He's in his 50s and he called me up. It would have been about 2 years ago. And he was panicking big time. Because he was on a decent paying job, but he didn't have their own house. They had not that much in super, barely anything in savings. He's like, "Fuck, man, please help me. Like, what can we do here? Like, how can we take this thing to the, how can we build something here that's going to really create some serious wealth?" And mate, we're probably 2 years in, 2 years on, and he's four properties deep. You know, we implemented different strategies. We put his super to work because he had a bit of super in there. You know, we leveraged that and put that to work, and it was good timing because the stock market's absolutely taken a dive this year, whereas the property's been absolutely flying. So, mate, yeah, he's just one of the other investor stories that we'll definitely get on and dissect as well and kind of cut through all that too.
And the other week you did a market update, which was really well received. So on some of these segments, you'll be touching on what's going on, keeping 100%. People up to date.
Very dynamic market at the moment, a lot changing, a lot of markets moving in very different directions. You know, 12 months ago, they were all moving in one direction. That was like COVID-driven, massive stock shortage, massive material shortage just across the country, super low interest rates. Like, yeah, the market was just going crazy. Very, very different market to now. And so, yeah, mate, like even location updates and research on different areas, but definitely like the market updates across the board of what we're seeing out there today. Yeah, mate, that's definitely going to be a regular segment as well.
Awesome. And I'm pumped. Sounds exciting.
The one other thing too, man, is obviously the guests, the special guests, you know, getting on these different experts. One thing I'm super proud of is the team that I've been able to build as I've gone and as I've progressed. And so one of the huge things, like I said, mate, this is all about giving back. It's property's given me so much. This is our way, my way of, you know, Australian Property Scout's way of giving back as well. It's going to be getting on those people that they really know how to take portfolios to a different level as well. Because, mate, there's chalk and cheese between someone that's mediocre, someone that's good, and then someone that's at the top of their field in every facet of life, right? And so we're really going to be looking to bring on that real top quality professionals and experts to help.
I love that.
Build it.
I love that. And even the APS team. I mean, you're the growth of from where you've come and the team. A lot of people don't really understand the bigger team and all the different facets and how it all works.
Yep.
So it'd be great to unpack that for people at some point too.
Yeah, definitely. We've also got obviously our region and our area, you know, specific experts and statewide experts and all the rest of it as well. So I think that'll be cool, especially when we're doing market updates, get those guys in. What are the markets, you know, what are the markets doing? What are the markets of interest, blah, 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 kind of running through all that. So I think that'll be really, really cool. I'm really looking forward to it.
So the audience out there, get involved.
Hit us up.
Hit.
Send us things. Anything.
You love the gram. You're always on.
Mate, never. Are you kidding?
You're on TikTok these days, aren't you? Are you on Snapchat still?
Nothing, mate. Well, how old are you?
You're still on MySpace. Are you? Is that what you?
You've just shown your age that you're definitely. Ooh.
I'm just trying to make the audience feel welcome. Doesn't matter where they are.
That's going to be something. A running topic of questioning guests and experts and everything. How old is this fella sitting in front of me? I have no idea, mate. You're like a George Clooney, but potentially older. I don't know.
A bit fitter, I'd say.
A bit fitter,
surely. Oh,
that's questionable.
Surely.
Questionable.
But anyway, let's move on to the first main topic you wanted to discuss.
Yep.
On today's podcast. Yep, it's the first podcast. Hey, how do you feel we're going so far? I mean, we're 20 minutes in. Feels like it's been going for 5 minutes.
Wow.
What do you think?
Maybe
are you happy with that?
You, mate, talking with you every time. 20 minutes with you, mate. It feels about 2 hours.
Well, I just listened. I switched off about 20 minutes ago. But I think we're going. I think it's going well.
I think it's good, mate.
I think it's good. Yeah.
I'm enjoying it.
Okay, good.
So, mate, yeah, obviously the big one that people need to kind of take into account and prepare themselves for, and whether they're at the start of their journey, they're about to start their journey, or even if it's a couple of years away, or they're in the midst of their journey, they're probably dealing with this right now. There's a lot of people that they don't understand what it's like to be a property investor. Everyone thinks it's sunshine and lollipops and everything's easy and I'm a millionaire and all the rest. It's not like that. There are times where you have no issues and there's times where things will come up. And if you, and like I said, mate, I'm not going to pull punches. If you're going to be weak at heart with this stuff coming up, you're going to crumble and you're going to sell when things come up. But realistically, you've got to build or have that bulletproof mindset, right? That unshakable mindset of a successful property investor to withstand the long term. And everyone starts at different points. Everyone's come from different backgrounds. Everyone's got different levels of I guess, you know, internal strength and whatnot to deal with this stuff as it comes through. But mate, it's a huge topic and it's something that can 100% make or break a journey as well.
There are so many different aspects of the mindset of a successful investor.
Yeah, definitely.
So where do you think it would start? Like for you, and I know you started, 13 years ago.
Yeah.
What was the thing that really clinched it for you to get started into property? What was the change in your situation that you thought, you know what, I need to do this, I have to do this, and it was a non-negotiable?
So for me starting out, it was a very mate, I knew, I never went to uni, right? So I dropped out of school at the start of year 11. I was 16. My parents tried to get me to go to a different school. I was traveling from the Southern Highlands up to Sydney, right? Which was about, it was about a 2.5 hours every day to get to school and 2.5 hours back. So it was a big slog. So when I went into year 11, it's like the HSC years and stuff. You know, I'm showing my years. You know, I was going through those times where it was just crazy amounts of study. And I was playing soccer really good level at the time. I couldn't withstand it, right? I couldn't do it. So I opted out and I tapped out of that. Parents tried to get me to go back into school, but what I realized during that time when I'm getting out here was I was never going to go to uni. I was never going to get a degree and be some super smart, you know, businessman, lawyer, doctor, whatever, that was going to make 500 grand a year or some huge amount of money that was going to take me to a different level. So I knew I had to be hands-on with what I was going to do. So I looked at trades, I looked at all these different things I wanted to become a builder, right? Like if I was a reasonably good soccer player back in the day, if soccer didn't work out, you know, it was builder long term I was kind of looking at. But what happened was as I was kind of building it out started making some money, was I was kind of looking at what different people really held their wealth in. And the big thing that kind of kept popping up, it's like across the board, across the world, it's property, right? Even if they're businessmen and they make a shitload of money in their business, where do they invest it? They invest it back into property. Now, so the more and more I looked into it, I was like, well, you know, what do I need to do to leverage? Well, you know, I probably wasn't thinking exactly in that way, but like how do I make money out of this thing? I'm not going to make money from a job. I'm probably never going to make big bucks out of a job. You know, how am I going to grow my wealth in this thing? And I remember reading about Harry Triguboff when I was young. And I think at that time, yeah, he's got like 5,000, 6,000 you know, properties or something now, you know, Mr. Meriton. This huge number of properties, I think at the time, maybe 3,000 or something like that. I was like, 3,000? This dude owns 3,000 bloody, you know, it was all units and apartments or whatnot, but like, I couldn't believe it. And I remember just thinking, like, imagine, like, how sick would that be to kind of build the wealth through that? Because I'm not going to make it from my job. I'm not going to be, you know, some crazy, you know, at the time, I definitely wasn't thinking I was going to be running, you know, some business that I was going to love. So I had to think of, well, what was my way of going to get there? And for me, it was property, right? So I realized that. And then I was like, okay, well, what do I need to do? How much do I need to save, you know, to get to this thing? And I realized, like, man, at the time, like when I bought my first property, I was making $750 a week. So after tax, I was clear. And I remember
this. So what job were you doing? Sorry.
I was actually working on the family farm. So I was literally just a laborer at the time. Because I left school and I think I left school on a Tuesday. And on the Wednesday, I was working as a laborer on the farm, right?
Family said, straight to the farm.
I was making like $80 a day. Like it was a joke, like how little I was making. It was funny.
He's like, mum, take me back to school.
Oh, man. Anyway, and it was just like, what I'm getting at here is like, you know, obviously we'll run through my journey, everything goes through. We'll do that in other eps. But what it was what I'm getting at here, the sacrifice of like 3 years of slaving away before I saved my first deposit to buy a property. It took me 3 years to get to that point, right? 19. And the sacrifice, I think, is that biggest step that so many people miss out. You know, I know Tim Gurner years ago, he got slammed for his smashed Avo comment about your Gen Ys or whatever, millennials and all the rest of it. But it's so true. Like if you're living beyond your means, you're never going to create the wealth that you want to create. Man, I was driving around in a shitbox old 88 Corolla. Like the thing was barely going most of the time. But I drove that until I was like, I think early 20s or something like that. Because it got me from A to B. It did the job. It cost me nothing. Nothing in fuel. Yeah, insurance is nothing. It was cheap as anything to own this thing. And all my mates had these beautiful cars. They're getting nice used, brand new used. They're getting souped up Jap cars, all the rest of it. I loved it. I wanted a Supra. But I was like, I was tossing up. By the time I had the money for a Supra, I was like, shit, I've got enough for a deposit for a house.
How much was that?
At the time?
Yeah.
I was about 20 grand. So 20 grand was enough to buy a Supra. I needed about 27 to buy a property. So I wasn't far off.
But let's put that in context.
Yeah, yeah.
3 years
of
grinding it out
to
save 20 grand.
Yeah, and making it. So I was probably about 18 when I could have bought it. So it was obviously the extra year that took me to save it. But yeah, man, watching everyone fly past me with it. And I was working other jobs as well, literally just working everything that I could. And man, like all the partying that I kind of.
I was going to say, you weren't going out. You couldn't have been blowing cash on.
No, I was very, like, I had to be very selective with where I went out because everyone knows, especially everyone young, you go out, it's not hard to blow $200-$300 on a night out,
especially
right?
Especially you.
So it's, man, it's that sacrifice. I think that's the biggest thing that people overlook. You know, they want everything and they want it now, but ultimately it takes time to save and to get there, especially if you're a low income earner. But you look at what I did based off that. If I had never saved that hard, man, I never would have got to a decent level without putting in those hard yards and building that early and getting that one. And then I got another one before Sydney boomed. Those two properties, getting them in Sydney before the market took off, that's set the precedent. That's the foundations of my portfolio, those two properties right there.
So what do you think it is that delayed gratification, what do you think it is that people just don't want to wait 3 years? And what was the difference between you and, say, some of your mates? Because I know you've spoken about a couple of your mates and they went out, blew all their cash. Yeah, yeah. What was the difference?
I think I had my eyes set on what I wanted in the distance. So like as I kept kind of going through, I always had, I know you, mate, you're very close. It's been a goal of yours for the last couple of years to hit 10 properties, right? I had that goal in my mind. I wanted to hit 10 properties before I turned 30. So still in my 20s. And I knew I didn't at the time know anything about releasing equity or anything. So I just thought I had to save a deposit every time. So I had to work my ass off, save as much as I could, and then put that in. Man, I think it's just one of those things. You've got to buckle up and you've got to do it. You either take the easy road and then whinge about it in 5 and 10 years when the people around you, when those one or two, you know, that were willing to sacrifice and put in the hard yards and now sitting on a nice little empire or something, or you can be one of those people that everyone else looks at and goes, holy shit, I wish I did that because they're now at that level. It's a sacrifice, man.
So really,
you do it or you don't.
The price that you're prepared to pay. And a lot of people listening to this might just glaze over it and think, you know what, sacrifice, discipline and all that. Mm. But it really is the epicenter of the journey. Like without that, nothing else would have happened. And you would have missed the, you know, people might say, oh, you were lucky. Mm. You timed it right. But the 3 years of discipline and working hard gave you the opportunity to be exposed to a market that was about to take off.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, I was lucky, you know, like people say lucky timing and stuff. Man, the asset I bought was shit. For me, who I am, like how much I was making at the time as well, it was terrible. So I was like, I did the hard yards, I bought it, I did the hard yards to hold it and did everything with it and then learned it and everything as I went. So
delayed gratification and the sacrifice is probably the most important thing.
Yeah, yeah. mate, it's huge. If you can't do that, you're never going to get your first deposit together. You don't get your first deposit together, you never get your first property. That's what you need to get, you know, get that starting block, get off the ground. And mate, it is, you know, rule number one. If you want to be, if you want to succeed at this thing, you have to sacrifice in the early part, 100%.
What about getting another job, like a side hustle or something to save that deposit? Because I know getting a deposit for a lot of people starting out is the hardest part. People can't get into the market. So what would you say to people that are,
if you've going 100%, if you've got the time to do it, like if that's realistically looking at it, you know, like people, I don't have the time. I've got a full-time job. It's like, what do you do after hours? Oh, I chill at home. I need to relax. I was like, all right, well, there's your answer. You know what I mean? Like, are you going to do the hard work? Are you going to, what are you doing on the weekends? Oh, I go out every weekend. All right, well, how about you? You work every second weekend. You have every other weekend off, and you enjoy the other weekends off. And that's what I did, mate. So I played semi-pro soccer. Used to get paid for that. And then as soon as the season had finished, I'd pick back up my bar job, and I literally, the nights I would have trained, I worked. And then the weekends when I would have played, I typically worked like a, you know, big night shift or something on a Saturday night. Roll into a Sunday morning with OT, you're killing it. Those extra couple of hours, you're absolutely destroying it. So, mate, it was, you know, it was a lot of weeks. I was making an extra $500-$700 a week. A lot of that was actually after I'd bought the first one, as in that much extra. But it was, that's what kind of helped me even get to my second one as well. But that, mate, it's huge. You know, you got to do what you got to do to get there. You know, that's as simple as it is. If anyone can do it from any level, you know, if it's the absolute proof in the pudding of that is obviously me with that first deal.
You know, you mentioned discipline, and then you also mentioned looking, you knew exactly what you wanted to create, or even if you just knew that you wanted something better. There's a lot of people that out there that don't believe that they actually can have a 10 property portfolio or like that. Other people do that. So how important, what was the difference, and how can people create that larger vision of what is actually really possible for them? So I think that's a massive blockage for people.
I think the huge thing is like what do you want? I think the biggest thing is like working out, what do you want? And for me, as a young fella, I love cars, right? And I love mansions. I'm not afraid to say, I love that stuff. I love Ferraris. Ferrari's about $700,000. That's a lot of money. Big mansion on the water is about $2-3 million. That's a lot of money.
In Queensland.
it's still a lot of money, mate. Right? No, it's still a lot of money.
But Sydney. Yeah.
Come on, mate. Come on. All right. Back then, all right? You bastard. But like realistically, like I was looking at it and like there was a lot of stuff that I wanted. So like you can't achieve, and this is where a lot of people go wrong. They think all I need is one property or two properties, you know, to achieve this goal. And it's not true, man. You can't achieve much with one or two properties. I don't care how much it's worth. You need multiple properties, multiple assets, especially spread across multiple markets to do a lot, right? So you have to stretch your thinking. Like if you think, it all comes down to what you want and then reverse engineering it. You know, if you someone just wants, it really does depend on the situations and really what you're chasing. But it's just stretching your mind. You know, what do you really want? And if people say $100,000, would you really be happy for the rest of your life if at 30 or 40 you hit $100,000 passive? Could you live on that and lived your best life for the next 40 years? The answer is probably not. Unless you're you live humbly within your means, there's nothing wrong with that. But for most people, if they hit that, like I hit about 60,000 passive in my late 20s, right? And I went and traveled on it. Man, you have to travel on a shoestring budget on $60,000, I'll tell you. And I was by myself, you know, single fella, traveling around, having a ball, but you run out of, you know, it doesn't go very far. So, you know, and then if you've got a family and you want to do that with a family, like $100,000 does not get, and especially these days, you know, it just doesn't go that far. So you've got to stretch your thinking of like, well, what do I really want to hit to fund the lifestyle that I really want to live? And then you reverse engineer that into properties. That's the easiest way to stretch your mind of like, five properties doesn't make sense. Three properties doesn't make sense because I'm going to be nowhere near my goal. You know, I need 8 or I need 10, and they need to be these properties out. And then you've got a plan. You start mapping out a plan as well. So I think that's huge.
But also understanding the difference between 3 properties and 10 properties.
Yep.
And that might be for another episode. But I think some people think, I only want 3 properties. Does that mean that they are happy to stay in their job and just wait for those 3 properties to pay themselves off over 30 years? You have to get into that mindset that is what's going to be possible for you.
I think it really depends, because I don't think there's anything wrong with starting with, say, 3 properties. There's a lot of people who say to me, I don't want to go too hard. I just want to do a deal a year. You know, maybe for the next 3-4 years, build out 3-4 properties. What happens is if you have success with it, it stretches your mind as to, you know, you
get some confidence.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's very, that's where it's a bit of a debatable, you know, conversation around that too. Cause yeah, it really depends what you're chasing. You want to chase big, man. Like, you know, 3 properties are going to get you to where you really want. Exactly what you said. It's going to take you, you know, 30 years. You got to pay these things off. Yeah, they have to be higher valued assets as well, which means you're probably going to bleed on the journey of owning those things for at least probably the first 10 years, as opposed to potentially, you know, so I'm saying maybe instead of $1 million assets, you know, you're pulling a terrible yield and costing you a fortune to hold them, maybe, you know, instead of the million, $500,000 assets that actually might be positively geared that don't change your lifestyle at all because of the type of asset they are that they are and the yield that they produce. A lot of the time, especially in terms of a percentage, you can actually get higher growth on those assets as well. So it's like, it's changing the thought pattern. It's like, you know, changing maybe what we're looking to invest in as well. But yeah, I mean, some people can't do it. Some people can't, but that's why it's all about that mindset. You know, this is how you build that bulletproof mindset and what you're really trying. It all comes down to what you're trying to achieve.
Well, let's face it. Most people don't love their jobs.
Yeah.
I mean, I think the stats are pretty clear. I think it's at least 80% of the people don't love their jobs. Mm-hmm. So either wait 30 years for those properties to pay themselves off or give yourself choices. I mean, financial freedom is choice, right? Yep.
Yeah,
so with the strategy that I'm keen to unpack with you at a later stage is how do you really get to that point where you can do your exit strategy, de-risk your portfolio, give yourself the choice whether or not you want to go to work or not based on the properties that you do buy.
Yeah, yeah.
And it is interesting. The confidence you get from the first few, they're the hardest ones, right? And then as soon as people get a taste of it, you're like, man, I think I can do this.
100%. The hardest one is always the first. The second hardest is typically always the second. And that's literally, it's always the same. And then if you've bought the right assets, it frees up. It becomes a lot easier after that. Because if you make money on the way in and you're in the right market, all of a sudden you're not needing to save your deposits. Your deposits are like being refinanced out as equity. And then you're using that and rolling that towards the next deals. And it becomes like, man, that's how I grew mine so big, was literally just stripping equity by making money on the way into it, strip it back out, put in the next one.
So would you say for people starting out, and I know we're sort of focusing on those people.
Yeah, yeah.
But just to think that it is possible.
Yeah.
You don't have to have all the answers to figure it out just yet.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it can be quite daunting and you want to get the first few in. But if you at least are open to the fact that it is possible for you, then you can at least start the process. And I know that might sound a little bit washy, but you need to have that bigger vision. But sometimes people get too scared off by that and like, nah, it's too hard. I don't want to do it.
Well, I think that's the other big one, right? So the other big one that you got to overcome is procrastination. So like a lot of people, they're like, you know, they get to the point where they stretch their mind to 10 properties and then they're like, shit, they can't pull the trigger on the first one because they're too worried about this big portfolio. So I think like it's good to stretch your mind in terms of your thinking, but then you need to execute. So you can become the most educated investor on the planet, but unless you pull the trigger on something, the most uneducated one that buys something in the right market is going to beat you. So you have to be willing to pull the trigger. And yeah, procrastination is the biggest thing you got to overcome as well. It can be huge. There's that analysis paralysis. People trying to get so much information and they get that information overload and they can't pull the trigger.
And it's because of fear, right?
Yes.
So how do you overcome that fear of people want to have the perfect property?
Yeah.
Everything has to be perfect. Mm. In your own portfolio when you were starting out, how close were those properties initially? Were they close to being perfect or you just thought, this is all the money I've got, this is the best property I can buy, that's it?
I probably didn't hit perfection until maybe deal like 7 or 8. They were crackers. They were absolute belters. They're probably, you know, very hard to find flaws with the deals that I did with those ones. But the first one, especially, mate, it performed really well. I bought it. I made good money on the way into it. I did well in terms of buying below market, but I didn't factor into it the cash flows. Now, for me, as an investor who I was, I couldn't afford negatively geared investments. So I was bleeding immediately on that property. So no, like definitely not. Mate, they all had little things wrong with them in those first few deals. When you're starting, man, you're never going to get the perfect deal. Yes, if you use a buyer's agent, you might mitigate a lot of that risk. And if you use the right person, like Australian Property Scout, they should tailor the right deal to your needs. You know, so if you're a lower income investor, and actually this is something we're going to cover off in a different episode further as well. I forgot my story. When I got burnt by a buyer's agent, this guy, I was negatively geared to my, like, or I could not take on another negatively geared asset to be able to move forward. I sold off my one negatively geared asset. As he brings me something that was even more negatively geared in a market that was already cooked. I was just like, man, like, what are you doing? Like, completely wrong property tailored. And that would have crushed my strategy. Like, I would have been done, right? You get the tailored, you need to tailor the deal to your right brief, to what you're chasing. What's right for you? Do you need something that's positively cash flow to be able to keep moving? Or do you need something that's got as much capital in it, in the strongest growth location you can get, so you can stretch that capital as far as possible because your income's okay and your servicing's okay, but you need that equity to release and keep moving forward? You know, what's a different property that you need to get?
That is an episode in itself.
Oh, 100%.
Because people scroll on realestate.com or domain. I mean, you might as well be on Instagram, right?
Yeah.
If you don't know what you're looking for,
yeah,
all those other steps are irrelevant, aren't they?
Yeah. Oh, man, 100%.
So we should really unpack that. That'll be awesome.
Getting clear on your brief.
Yeah.
Bang.
Or knowing or trying to get an understanding as to what you actually need.
Yeah, yeah.
The what first before you start looking anywhere.
Yeah. But that's it, man. 100%. I agree with you on that point, 100%. Because then that's when you can get clear on your brief and you go and you execute on it. Execute on it. A lot of people, like, they get their, like you were saying before, get their heads in the clouds of what I'm chasing, but then just go out there and just try and chase a great deal, you know, instead of figuring out what is the actual property that I need first in my portfolio and then go find that. Find the right market, find the right asset within the right market, and then execute on that.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be perfect. You know, if you're chasing, oh, I really want 30 grand below market, but I get 20 and it's positive cash flow and it's a decent house, and we're very confident in the location is going to grow, you know, pull the trigger.
Well, most people only want to buy in their surrounding suburb.
In their backyard, yeah.
So that's another episode.
That's another topic, mate. That's another topic.
Well, mate, I think we've covered so much on the first episode.
Mate, there's one last thing with the mindset. Before we cut this, man, I've got to throw this in.
Throw it in.
Thing I want to have. Yeah. It's like, man, as you go, things will come up, even within the portfolio. You have to be strong. You have to be sturdy. You have to have a good, strong mindset and a will, because things are going to come up. All these things you're going to do, you're going to tick every box. You're going to try and get, you know, fit your exact brief, enter the correct market. You're going to do everything right. At some point, you're going to buy something that you missed that had something wrong, or your building a pest inspector is going to miss it, or you're going to have problem tenants. Prepare yourself early. We all go through it. Doesn't matter if you own one, if you own 10, or if you own 40, you're going to cop it at some point. Don't be naive of thinking, like I said before, it's all about rainbows and sunshine and all the rest of the stuff. It's not. Different things will come up. Prepare yourself early. It's going to come up. And then when it comes up, keep a cool, level head and just deal with it as you need to deal with it. You can always preempt this stuff. Obviously, getting the best property manager you can get is a big one. Getting your building and pest reports, trying to get through the properties, making sure you're doing little things. But you're also going to be realistic. When you buy a property, we always factor in a $2,000 to $3,000 maintenance buffer depending on the deal, because we know, you know, there's a 50% chance that, you know, 2 weeks after settlement, something's going to break. You know, it's just literally these things happen. Yeah, 100%, man. And so it's that little buffer you've got to be aware of. Don't be naive in investing. You know, these things pop up, but it's part of the game. And if you let it affect you too much and you cash out because this or that happens, it's going to ruin your journey. You need to pull your big pants on, big boy pants on, accept that it's going to happen at some point, deal with it when it does, and then keep moving forward, because you got to have that end goal, that end picture in mind.
Bigger picture.
100%.
What if someone said to you, nah, I don't want to deal with that. I just want to buy a brand new house. That's another episode.
That's another
The difference episode. Between buying end of the line, brand new, and existing market.
Paying retail or paying overs, as
that's right.
I like to call it. Yeah.
Some people might be thinking that, why don't you just buy brand new? There's a whole bunch of reasons why you would or wouldn't, or which we will unpack, just wanted to plant that seed with you.
It's planted. It's growing.
And also, I'm ready. Just on that, have you at any point in your property portfolio thought, nah, I've had enough. There's just too many hassles with this property.
I've thought about selling properties, definitely, like that have had issues come up, and you get, mate, I call it, you have like a bad year. There'll be a property where like you have 3 years, you never even notice it, and then everything breaks on it. I haven't had it happen to me on that many properties, right? So like I'm sitting, you know, 40 plus props. I've sold a couple off over the years as well. But you'll get that one, you know, one in 10 that you'll get, and she's fine. And all of a sudden, this breaks, the next thing breaks, and all of a sudden you've copped. Yeah. But you got to put it in the scheme of things. It might be $4,000 or $5,000 worth of stuff that pops up. It's part of the journey, man. Like, you're investing in a real asset. The reason why so many people love property is because it's a real tangible asset that you can go and force value to. You can renovate it, you can paint it, you can put carpets in, you put new kitchens in, you can do all the rest of it. But at the end of the day, you are dealing with bricks and mortar, something that's real, that's there, right? And you're also dealing with people, tenants, property managers, all the rest of it. Maybe these things are going to go, these things are going to go wrong during the journey, but you got to keep your eye on that longer term picture and just, yeah, man. Just
so why didn't you sell? Was it you just thought, did it?
Oh, mate, if I'd sold the property that I'd had the biggest issues with, I probably would have made 50 grand on it in the first 12 months of ownership. I've held it for another 5 years since then. I'm probably up another 250.
There you
go. So it's like the 5 grand and the headaches and the, you know, the bullshit you deal with for 12 months on that property is massively outweighed by what you get.
So just write it out. Just got to write it out. Yeah. Got to stomach it.
100%. Do all the checks you can at the start. That was like the one property in particular I'm talking about was one that I bought very early on. But yeah, man, you got to ride this stuff out. Like, it's the number, the percentage of people that sell their properties in the first 12 months of ownership is crazy.
Really?
And it's because they come in, you know, they don't do the right checks, they don't do the right things, and then they let that overcome them as well. You know, the big one is not doing the right checks before they buy it, so then they can negotiate potentially on building pests, get things fixed, blah, blah, blah.
Can I ask you is the biggest issue, like so you have a, naturally property's going to have some problems with them, but if you've bought the right property, you bought well, and you know the property's growing, you can stomach the
100%.
Fact, whereas if you've bought a dud,
Or
you've paid overs and you're getting all these problems, understandably you're going to be like, nah.
Yeah.
So it comes back to buying the right property first.
It does. It does. And it also does come back to assessing the portfolio too. So this is a big thing we're going to unpack in another episode.
Yeah.
He's another client. This is Cumble. I'm on board and he bought something with another buyer's agent. It did okay in the last 12 months, you know, or the last 18 months with a run that it had in a COVID, you know, boom driven area. The market's starting to come back. It's rolling off its fixed interest only. It's rolling a P&I. He's going to be sitting at over 30 grand a year net loss, like net.
And how long has he had?
Negative cash flow. He's had it for like 18 months. So he's weighing, again, like, you know, weighing up different scenarios of do you, and this is where it comes into the exit. Times to move on.
Should you sell? That's another episode right there.
Yeah, definitely.
When to sell?
Yeah, 100%. Exit is huge in this game. People that say, you know, you buy forever and you never sell, mate.
But not just from a de-risking. I'm talking about a bad asset.
Yeah.
Should you hold it or should you sell it? That's going to be really interesting.
I think for that one, we'll need a bit of help from the listeners to send in a couple of properties to maybe do some case studies on. Some no financial advice, feedback.
Disclaimer.
But disclaimer, definitely. But, you know, good, honest, genuine advice on what I would do if that property was in my personal portfolio, what would I do with it? Because it's very case by case.
Mm.
The biggest factor is area. Yeah, you got to look at the area. If the area is going to keep performing, mate, you do your thing, right? You hold on. But like when you're in a declining market and you think that thing's only going to come back or stagnate for the next 10 years and it is a serious problem for you, that's when you got to weigh up. You know, do you hold it? Because I call it velocity of money. So velocity of money is like, what's that? For one, what's the equity in the deal doing? But for two, what's the debt doing? So if you're tied up with an asset that's got a huge amount of debt tied up to it and a huge amount of capital tied in and you're stuck, to weigh up those scenarios too.
I love that. Velocity of money. Mm. Trademark that. Is it?
Yeah, I've already got that one trademarked, mate. You owe me 10 bucks for just saying it just then. So sorry, mate.
Well, mate, we're nearly hitting 50 minutes from an episode that was supposed to be 25.
Mate, can't shut you up.
This is a sign of things to come, Sammy.
Wow.
How do you think it went? This is your long time in the making, first episode done. Sesh.
Yeah, mate. Freestyling. Bomb Fun comes to MCs is running with it. It was good, mate. I enjoyed it. What about you? What were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think you could have been better. No, I think it's been great. I think the listeners out there will find a huge amount of value and I can't wait to hear what questions. Stump Sam. I'm coining that as a segment. Try and stump him.
Stump Sam.
Stump him with either a situation about a property or just something to get you a little bit nervous, just to put you under the pump a little bit.
Mate, I'm happy to run with some nervy questions. All right. Let's go. Let's run with it.
Anything else on our first ep that you want to wrap up with?
Mate, I've loved it. I've loved doing it with you, mate. I've been, like you said, long time coming doing it. I'm really looking forward to keeping these really regular and pumping through these consistently. Big thing I'd say, if people want to touch base, reach out to us, have a chat about their investing journey, where they're at, and getting involved and invested with Australian Property Scout for one, you can always reach out to us. It's www.australianpropertyscout.com.au. We're on all the socials, at Australian Property Scout as well. And yeah, just reach out, follow us, subscribe to this podcast. We're going to be covering a huge amount of topics as well. And mate, I'm excited. And I'm very excited for someone to guess your age right as well.
We'll leave it for another episode.
All right, mate. Well, thank you very much, mate. Thanks, listeners. And we'll be tuning in soon.